Hi, this is Chelsea Vale. You have found the Whole Heart Podcast, a podcast for conscious parents who want to do things differently. Parenting the Whole Heart Way is about love, connection, play, and raising our children naturally. It can get, at times, a little bit crunchy. Let's jump in. This episode is on a topic I have avoided because until recently I have feared how it would be received. However, it's another area I feel requires open dialogue and honest conversation because our children can be greatly affected should we let the powers that be control the narrative. Whether you're in America or anywhere else in the world, you're familiar with critical race theory, the quote BLM movement, the term white privilege, and the name George Floyd. I thought long and hard about this episode, which is why I've chosen to write it out and read my thoughts rather than how I typically record, which is off the cuff. Anytime a white person talks about race, there's always a risk that they're going to be labeled a racist, a bigot, or any other defaming term. And often the response is, well, you don't get it, which I think is unfair. I'm coming at this topic not as a white person, but as a concerned mother who wants her children to have equal opportunity at success and a full life as anyone else. I don't want my children to be punished or made to feel guilty for being white. I'm a mother who does not want her children to think that they've won the lottery because they're white, blonde, blue-eyed, nor do I want them to feel any guilt or judgment because of their skin color. Sound backwards? Hear me out to the end, please. I was born to two white parents from Georgia, a southern U.S. state. Regardless of the fact that I was born in Alaska, I'm very much a southern woman, having been raised by one. If you're not from America, this may take some explaining. A southern mama is a caricature of herself. They are a thing. We ate biscuits and gravy with grits, fried chicken and greens with iced tea. We sang songs and danced on the porch at family gatherings, and the kids ran around barefoot and dirty on the lawn, chasing rabbits and catching crabs on the beach in the sticks of the South. This is a culture that I share with anyone raised in the South, regardless whether they are black or white. We from the South. Okay. This was my family culture. My childhood home was Houston, Texas, and I attended school with students of all sorts of diverse backgrounds. My friends were black, white, Mexican, Indian, Asian, a true melting pot of diversity in Texas. There were times when both my parents were unemployed. We lived in the same house my entire childhood, ate whatever was on sale or clearance, put water on cereal a few times if there wasn't any milk in the fridge. There were crimes in our neighborhood, gang violence, robberies. Even as a kid, I went to high school where a police officer was shot one street away from my childhood home. We didn't have designer clothes, a computer in the home, TVs in our rooms, or cell phones until late high school or even college. We didn't have excess money for me to be in the best dance classes or sports teams, and we had to take out loans for cars, clothes, and even college. In fact, most family vacations were road trips to the grandparents or camping. We didn't have a maid, a cook, a nanny, and more often than not, one or both of my parents handled the lawn care. I went to Europe on a class trip as a teen, but I had raised money myself, babysitting. I was never cold, hungry, or in any danger, but I would hardly say that I grew up privileged. Anyone, any color skin, any sexuality, any age, and religion was allowed in my family home. In fact, I had an aunt, Aunt Bev, who was and is as black as night. I don't think I even realized that Aunt Bev was black until I was a teenager and we had discussions about her work in Japan and the racism that she had dealt with throughout her career. I was intrigued to hear her experiences and saddened at the thought of anyone being mean to Aunt Bev. Growing up, I read a lot of biographies. I loved reading about badasses like Amelia Earhart and Harriet Tubman and Jane Addams. When I read Harriet Tubman, I was in awe. I was in awe of a woman strong enough to fight for what's right. A woman who was fearless and intentional. And I admired knowing your own strength. That's something that I aspired to. But also knowing your life's purpose and fulfilling your destiny. This is something that I admired about Harriet Tubman. And I became probably obsessed through fourth and fifth grade. I always felt that I could relate to the homeowners who assisted Harriet Tubman escaping her life as a slave and rescuing people. My childhood self would think, if I lived during this time, that would be me. I'd save every single one of the slaves and I'd stop at nothing till they were free. I loved reading about Abraham Lincoln and how he freed the slaves. I always loved reading about the Civil War, the Civil Rights Movement, and those who stood on the right side of history, like Ruby Bridges and Rosa Parks. I've always loved World War II stories as well, and movies that showcased the Germans, the white Germans who helped the Jews escape, regardless of the danger that they were in. But the mainstream narrative is that America is historically racist and that racism is systemic. Our history books don't highlight or even note the thousands of white soldiers who fought to end slavery. It's rare that anyone mentions the white people, like my great-grandfather, who refused to own slaves, even though he was in the South. But instead, he hired men who were qualified for the job to help him on the ranch and paid everyone the same wages regardless of skin color. Rumor has it that my great-granddad also invited men to church each Sunday. Black, white, or purple, they were invited to join. There's also very little mentioned about the black citizens of the North who were free, had jobs, owned land and homes, and prospered in America without issue. The narrative is that all black people were slaves and all white people were slave owners. That even during the civil rights movement, all white people were fighting for segregation to continue and all white people were secretly KKK, but little is mentioned about the white people who marched alongside their black brothers and sisters. We, as white people, are supposed to feel guilty for being white, as though we personally have been racist and are incapable of understanding what it's like to be mistreated solely based on something out of our control, like our skin color, gender, sexuality, all things I think we have in common as humans in an imperfect world. Wouldn't it be better for our children if we focused on the character of some people and not lump anyone into a category or continue to stereotype them based on something like skin tone? A few years ago, my ex-husband said, "Our son is racist," and he kind of laughed. And I said, with a stern face and laser focus in my eyes, How is our 2-year-old son racist?" And he said, "Well, at Chuck E. Cheese, a kid was in his way on the slide and he yelled, 'Move, black.'" Oh, and I asked, "Was the child wearing a black shirt?" And of course, his response was yes, to which I replied, "Then your job as the parent is to say, 'Yes, he's wearing a black shirt, but I bet he has a name. Hey, sweetheart, what's your name? Okay, Adam, would you mind moving so that my son Cannon can slide?'" When I'm asked to describe someone helping me at the store, I don't use skin tone. I describe their look, their clothing, their demeanor. This is our responsibility as parents to model for our children, to look beyond skin tone. It's not about being colorblind, but it is about looking at someone as a person, regardless of their tone of skin, how much melanin they have in their skin. We're made to believe we are racist if we move to the side on a walkway or clutch our purse when someone who appears a bit sketchy is walking our way. This is a survival instinct that humans possess called pattern recognition. Let's just say, for argument's sake, this person is black. They're wearing their pants sagging. They have a teardrop tattoo on their cheek, a backwards cap with gang symbols sprayed on it, and a chain wallet. We move to the side because this is prison attire, a sign to us that this person may be looking for trouble. Now pretend this is a white guy, also with pants sagging, murderous tattoos, chain wallet, etc. Would you move to the side or change direction? Absolutely, because the pattern recognition is not race specific. It's the way the person has chosen to present himself as though they just got out of prison or hope to be there someday soon. Let's change the scenario. You're walking down a dark alley and a black kid comes walking your way. He's wearing fitted jeans, standard t-shirt, and smiles at you. Are you scared or intimidated? Most, if not all of you, would say no. Why would I be scared? Because it's just a kid coming at you. Black, white, polka dot, there's no legitimate reason to be scared. And most all of us feel that way. When my black friends argue, "Yeah, well, you've never had someone change lanes at the checkout because they see a black man at the register," to which I often respond, "How do you know it's because you're black? What if they just want the Bubblicious bubblegum that's only on aisle 3 and they, or maybe they forgot to grab the milk?" This way of thinking is sometimes, not always, but sometimes a result of a culture that teaches white people are inherently racist, a narrative that's being pushed in schools and homes right now that couldn't be further from the truth, and in my opinion, causes more damage than good and is regressive, not progressive. In Martin Luther King's famous "I Had a Dream" speech, he says, "I have a dream that my black daughters will one day be judged not on their skin tone, but on the content of their character." This is the dream. This is what we should be teaching our children. They need to have the words to help this dream become a reality. When I'm hit on by a black man and I'm not interested, I often hear the retort, "Oh, you don't dig brothers?" To which I respond, "It's not your skin tone I'm disinterested in. It's the way that you came at me and the fact that you're being crass," or whatever legitimate reason I have for refusing their attempt at my attention. My first serious boyfriend was black. We dated off and on most of my adolescence and well into college. I loved him dearly and still consider him one of my great loves. I loved him for who he was, having nothing to do with skin tone. We remained close friends until the summer of 2020, when he fell victim to the mainstream narrative and our friendship ended. I'll explain. In June 2020, a criminal refusing to comply with police officers during an arrest was accidentally suffocated to death. This gentleman had fentanyl in his system, unbeknownst to officers at the time, and the cruel, inhumane officer had his knee in his back and the man died. The man who had a lifetime of violent convictions prison time, and even raped and robbed a pregnant woman with his friends. The officer who killed him was 100% of the wrong. This gentleman did not deserve to die. However, our media spun this into a race crime, which was incredibly convenient for the 2020 elections. Regardless that this man was criminal, and regardless that he was combative during the arrest, we were made to believe this was an issue of race. A nonprofit that's now a billion-dollar entity started terrorizing both white and black neighborhoods outraged about this gentleman's death. Not once did the officer use a racial slur or comment on the man's race. Not once. He was an asshole cop that killed a criminal and should be punished accordingly. But when monuments are created in his name and he is martyred, this sends the message that he should be honored. Why are we honoring a criminal who died fighting an officer during an arrest instead of honoring people of color legitimately making a difference in our world and improving black communities and black culture? Young black children today know this man's name and are taught that white people are to be feared. But how does this solve the problem? Why not construct a statue of Maya Angelou or Madam C.J. Walker? Why is this criminal a role model for black youth? I wasn't vocal about this at the time, and I didn't participate in the social media trend of blacking out my profile pic. My friend of over 20 years reached out and said, "Your silence during this difficult moment is why our friendship has come to an end." I was outraged. I was more mad at him than I'd ever been before. And I think at all the years we dated and all the years we loved and lived, I had never been mad at him, not once. In fact, I don't think he ever even disappointed me until that moment. I asked why. Why has our friendship come to an end? My silence is why you're ending our friendship? And his response infuriated me that much more. He said, "Because that could have been me." And this made me fly off the handle. I responded, "That man could have no more been you than the man on the moon." Why? Because you're not a criminal. You're a law-abiding citizen, well-dressed, well-spoken, and in the unlikely event that you were arrested, you would abide by the officer's requests. And seeing as how you're an attorney with a PhD from an Ivy League school, I doubt very highly you'd have a knee in your back on the ground outside a diner. This got me thinking even more in depth about the narrative posed that the U.S. is systemically racist. I can't think of any law or policy in place that is racist. I can, however, think of laws that protect minority citizens and prevent discriminatory practices in almost every field. I can also think of laws that make it more difficult for white people to succeed. Laws like affirmative action help minorities obtain employment, and a white person might not get the job if the company requires diversity and has a quota to meet. Regardless of my qualifications, if I'm neck and neck with someone of color applying for a job, they are 10 times more likely to get it. If they don't get the job, they could sue on basis of race. Could I? I'd be laughed out of court. Would I be accepted at a prestigious HBU, which stands for Historically Black University, like Howard? Most likely not. Why? Because I'm white. But could a black person apply to any university in the entire U.S. and be accepted if they met the standards? Yes. In fact, Princeton has changed policies to allow more black students acceptance, regardless of whether or not they meet the minimum standards, to undo their historically racist past, as the media would have them believe. I can't get a scholarship for being white. Certain treatments for COVID are only available to minorities as well. And my kids can be overlooked for spots in private schools because most schools have spots held for minorities and even tuition assistance available for them that are not available to whites. In college, I took a diversity course, and a truly dumb exercise was completed that made me stand out in front of all my peers. It was basically me and a blind student, also white, and we were scorned in front of our peers at the end of this exercise for being white, therefore privileged. I began to cry. It was one of the most awful experiences I had ever had, and it felt completely unwarranted, as this experience had nothing to do with me, but was probably written by somebody that made assumptions about someone who fit the criteria on this quote-unquote exercise. I was humiliated. Through my tears, I asked the other students, most of them different religions, races, sexualities, genders, etc., "Have any of you ever had a gun held to your head for being the race that you are?" "I've had a gun held to my head for being white." "Have any of you ever had a group of black teenagers surround your car and call you names like honky and cracker or any other racial slurs? Have you ever been shot at and racial slurs yelled at you? Have you ever not been hired because of your race?" "I have." These are things that I've considered isolated events. And I don't think that all black people or all Mexicans are racist just because that was the skin tone of the attackers that I've dealt with over the years because of my white race. But I don't think it's fair for anyone to assume that just because I'm white, I haven't experienced racism. I experience discrimination because I'm white. I experience discrimination because I'm a woman, a mother, etc. So on and so on. We experience hurt at the hands of those that are cruel, regardless of skin tone. It's about character, not color. And this is what we should be teaching our young children. This is backwards thinking. It's swinging from one side of the pendulum all the way to the other side. For us to teach children that our nation is historically racist, or if there is such a thing as white privilege, I can't tell you one time in my life where I've gotten something just because I'm white. In fact, I've experienced the opposite in more times than I can count. What we have here that's happening in our country is reverse racism and continued division, blaming, and shaming. A more open, honest dialogue has to be the goal. Our children should be taught to look at people, places, and events objectively and form judgments on people solely based on character and experience with that person, not on race, religion, gender, sexuality, or age. Poor character is the issue, not color. If our nation is systemically racist, then why would former President Barack Obama identify as a black man when he is equal parts black and white? Is it because he and his team of publicists knew that he'd be more successful if he identified as black? Did they know that the black community would shun him if he identified as what he truly is, which is mixed race? He was raised by his white mother and grandfather in Hawaii, but he is known globally as the first black president. Why? Because it helped him get into office to be black and be a minority. Rachel Dolezal is Czech, born to two white parents but identified as black, even though that wasn't her race. She claimed to have an African-American father falsely on a college application. She taught at Howard University, a historically black university, and was the president of the NAACP in Spokane, Washington, until it was discovered that she was in fact white, not black. Because she was white, she was removed from this position after it was discovered. The Church of Islam does not allow white people to attend their meetings. They teach their congregation not to depend on the white man or use the white man to move forward. A nurse I once worked with saw me and my office mate, also white, sharing a drink once, and she said, "My mother told me if I ever drank after a white person, I'd die. Y'all got different germs than we do." I stared at her confused as to what to say next. Had I made a comment like that to her, I would be fired and likely have charges pressed against me for misconduct in the workplace or discriminatory practices and had my license revoked. I commented on a gentleman not wearing a mask during the pandemic at the grocery store. We shared that in common, but he laughed, "I'll just use my black privilege. They won't say shit to me." But I'm made to feel that I'm historically racist as a white person and the world is my oyster. When I question the mainstream narrative or make comments like that, which I would never actually do, or if I question the liberal takeover, I'm told things like, "climb off your ivory tower," or "read a book, you racist Nazi." This is not progression in the right direction. This approach to racism causes extreme division. Our system in America is designed for anyone who works hard and has talent, intelligence, and drive to achieve whatever they set out to achieve. It is designed to protect minorities against discrimination, which I firmly believe in and support. And the only way to rid the country of racism is to start putting the focus on the character of its citizens and not the color.